Gentus presents The Travellers by Vivian Stewart. Performed by Simon Slater. Chapter 1. Since early morning on Saturday, May the 12th, 1810, crowds have been gathering at every vantage point between the observatory and South Head to witness the departure of Commodore Bligh's three homeward-bound ships. Divided between the Hindustan and the Dromedary were the officers and 345 other ranks of the regiment that, although now designated the 102nd, had long been known to the colony's inhabitants as the Rum Corps. With them were over 200 women and children, most of whom had been in tears when the order came for them to embark. Their muted cries and their waving handkerchiefs brought a feverish response from those on shore, and Jenny, standing with Francis Spence among the packed crowd of watchers, felt her own eyes fill as she waited. HMS Hindustan, wearing the Commodore's broad pennant at the main, was the first to get underway, her signal guns booming in response to the salute fired from Dawes Battery, and her seamen manning the yards. It was impossible to identify Justin among the press on deck, but when the frigate worked out of the anchorage and started to make sail, she saw him, or imagined she saw him, go racing up to the foremast head and raise a hand in salute. "They say," Francis Spence observed, thinking to distract her, "that they will make a fast passage, Jenny. Under 5 months, Captain Pascoe told my husband. But I doubt whether even that will be fast enough for Colonel Patterson. I saw him when he went on board the Dromedary. He was a shadow of himself, and so lame that his wife had to support him. I confess I felt sorry for him, and wished that he might have been left here to end his days in peace. After all, he had no part in the Rum Corps' rebellion, had he?" Jenny turned to look at her. Francis, she thought, seldom had a bad word to say of anyone, and like so many of her countrymen, she was the soul of kindness and generosity. "Andrew was like Colonel Patterson," she said thoughtfully, "but he was a broken man after that duel he fought with Mr. MacArthur. That was why he took to drink. Andrew says he was never free of pain. God grant he may reach England safely, although," Francis sighed, her blue eyes troubled, "what evidence he can contribute to Colonel Johnston's trial passes my comprehension. And indeed, I am unable to understand why only Colonel Johnston is to stand trial, and MacArthur, who we all know was the real instigator of the rebellion, goes scot-free. Andrew said His Excellency told him that Mr. MacArthur would certainly be put on trial here if he returned," Jenny supplied. She smiled without amusement. "And Commodore Bligh, during his enforced sojourn at Long Reekin, made it quite abundantly clear that he intends to bring all the rebel officers to trial if he can, once he reaches England. I believe he consulted the new Advocate General, Mr. Bent, as to the legal position, particularly in regard to Mr. MacArthur, who was told that it was a matter for the Colonial Office." "Have you met the Ellis Bents, Jenny?" Francis asked curiously. "Only at the Governor's Ball when you pointed them out to me. I've never spoken to either of them." Jenny turned again to watch the departing ships as the small Porpoise and then the lumbering Dromedary weighed anchor. On the wharf, the pipes and drums of the 73rd played them away, and the Guard of Honour presented arms. Andrew was in attendance on the Governor, and she recognised his tall figure among the group of officers surrounding the vice-regal couple. Mrs. Macquarie, she saw, was talking to Mrs. Bent, and, yes, her eyes had not deceived her. Henrietta Dawson was with them, and Lucy Tempest stood a few yards behind her, twirling a frilled parasol and seemingly engrossed in conversation with one of the Governor's young aides. "Henrietta is very friendly with Mrs. Bent," Francis said, following the direction of Jenny's gaze. "They are birds of the same feather, I think. Certainly they are united in their disapproval."